1380 WPHM. It's Caleb Gordon filling in for Paul Miller. So far today, we've been bringing you conversations from a trip I had in the Upper Peninsula. And, well, now we're in the studios of WDBC AM 680 in Escanaba, Michigan. And Charles Lindquist is with us. He's the director of the Delta County Historical Society. Did I get that right?
President. Yes.
President of the Delta County Historical Society.
Right.
Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm just fine. Good to meet you.
We are in Escanaba, what a cool town here on Lake Michigan. I mean, you have a cool downtown community. You've got a waterfront going on here. And unfortunately or fortunately, it sometimes gets missed over, glossed over when people are looking at, traveling in Michigan. Not a lot of people come up here. So before we get into some of the things that you have to see here when you visit Escanaba, let's first kind of go back in history and why is this town here to begin with? How did this all get to be, the second largest town in the UP?
Escanaba began as a place to ship iron ore the Chicago Northwestern Railroad that came in here in the early 1860s. They built some trackage up to a mine near Negaunee, about 50, 60 miles from here. And they thought, where's a good place to put our dock to ship the iron ore out of? They wanted a place on Lake Michigan. And this seemed like a pretty darn good location. So they settled, they put their merchant dock and then their ore dock on the north side of a peninsula that sticks out called Sand Point. And Escanaba formed on Sand Point, and the docks were just on the north side of Sand Point. And from just about the first shipment of ore in 1865, right up until the last shipment of ore, at least for a while, we hope, went out in 2017. This was a pretty important port for the shipping of iron ore. And the Chicago Northwestern, for the first century anyway, of Escanaba's history, was the main business in this town. This was the divisional headquarters for the Chicago Northwestern in the UP. They had workshops here. Mm-hmm. They had a big roundhouse to take care of the engines. They had all kinds of things here besides the dock. And so when you had a town of, say, 9,000 in the year 1900, about 800 of those 9,000 were employees of the Chicago Northwestern. Mm. You think they're mostly all guys, and they have wives and a couple of kids, and you can see where this was a railroad town, big railroad town, and they were shipping iron ore out, largely from the Menominee Range, but also from the Marquette Iron Ore Range as well.
I think we can draw a lot of parallels here between what the railroads and the waterways and the shipping did for Escanaba as what they did for Port Huron as well. Just sure. instead of Chicago Northwestern, it's Grand Trunk, but same concept.
I mean,
it was a huge employer back in the day in Port Huron. We were, had car ferries going across the St. Clair River between us and Canada all the time. So
anyway, this was a big port for the shipping of iron ore, and with the divisional headquarters and repair shops and whatnot here, this was a big railroad town.
And that's why you're on the map.
That's why we're on the map. Of course, the railroad's gone now, and we shipped our last, at least for the moment, a load of iron ore out 2 years ago. We might get some back sometime. The railroad is still hanging on to that property.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might come back. But meanwhile, we have other things that keep this town going as well.
So you run the Delta County Historical Society, and you mentioned Sand Point.
Yes.
Sand Point's both the peninsula that the town is sitting on, and also the name of the lighthouse at the end of the peninsula.
Yes, right.
Correct. Yep. Tell us about the lighthouse.
The lighthouse was built and opened in 1867, and it had a varied career. It burned in 1886, I think. The first lighthouse keeper, it was a woman, and she died in the fire. They rebuilt the lighthouse right away, and it kept going until the 1930s, when I think the shipping people said, you know, that lighthouse, we can't see that light so well anymore. The town is growing up so much with all that light downtown and whatnot. So they put a light out in the water. They said, we're going to decommission the lighthouse. And they said they were going to turn it into a residential location for Coast Guard guys. And they tore down the tower, and they built up the residential area, and they turned just a pretty little lighthouse into a really homely building. It was really bad. And then in the early 1980s, they said, well, we're not going to maintain that anymore. Does anyone want that lighthouse? Well, we had a museum right next door, and we had a guy on our board who was a Coast Guard guy, and we had some others, and they didn't have a lot of money, and so they wondered, should we take that on? And someone on the board said, you watch. If we say we're going to do it, you will not believe the support we're going to get from the community. We're going to get businesses. We're going to get labor unions. We're going to get ordinary people. We're going to get school children. This town is going to come in and support us. And they did. And then the state helped, too. They have a program for helping lighthouses get started or maintain themselves. And, you know, it all worked out well. And in 1990, we opened up the lighthouse to the public. I should say we brought it back the way it was. We restored that tower. Nice. We lowered the roof on the residential area, and it looked just the way it had before. Opened it up, and people have been coming in ever since.
I'll draw another parallel here. We have a great, in our community, we have a great light station, the Fort Gratiot Light Station, which is Michigan's oldest on Lake Huron. Very similar situation where it was part of the Coast Guard complex that was maybe not in the best of shape and has now been transferred to the county park and is undergoing, has undergone, you know, thousands if not millions of dollars in restorations. Uh-huh. And it's a beautiful site now, but it wasn't always that way. And it was due to the volunteers that did it, just like you did here.
Yep. And, you know, when you do it, people love lighthouses, and they love to, early in our season when we open up on Memorial Day, and then we go all summer, and a lot of our people in the early part of the season, it's crazy. They come from Kansas, Nebraska, Oklahoma. They come from the Great Plains states, and I always wonder what, you know, I guess they've had a long, hard winter just looking at those storms coming through, and they just want to see a big body of water, and a lot of folks everywhere love lighthouses. And, of course, out in a place like Oklahoma, you don't have a whole lot of lighthouses, so it's kind of neat to see them. And they come through, they see ours, they love it. I call it a kind of a mama bear lighthouse. It's only 48 stops or steps up to the tower, the lantern room at the top. And, you know, just about anyone can handle that. And they just really enjoy it. And then we have the museum right next door, filled with things related to our history of Delta County. And they just have a really good time.
This is 1380 WPHM. Paul Miller is gone today, and I'm bringing you more of our conversation from the Upper Peninsula. And, well, now we're in Escanaba, studios of WDBC AM 680. And joining us right now, Charles Lindquist. He's the president of the Delta County Historical Society, which operates a museum and lighthouse here in Escanaba, Michigan. Charles, we talked a little bit earlier about some of the history of the town being put on the map by both the railroads and the ore dock here in town. But as you alluded to, that ore dock is not used right now. It hasn't been used in a couple of years since the Empire Mine closed. So do we ever see that opening back up or what?
Well, as far as the ore dock goes, it really depends on the Empire Mine. All of the ore they were getting for some years came from the Empire Mine, which is up in Marquette County. And it had opened in the 1960s, and they were getting down to, having to do an awful lot of work to get more quality ore from that mine, and getting it expensive. And they closed it down a couple of years ago, and it's owned by Cleveland Cliffs. And Cleveland Cliffs has said, if we can find a partner to help us with the costs of that, there's a chance we might open it up again. But it would take someone else to help us out on the cost. So we'll see as far as that's concerned.
So all the ore coming out of Tilden up there goes out of Marquette.
Yes,
it goes. But it doesn't come down here.
Right.
All right.
Right.
So what happens if that mine doesn't reopen? I mean, you've got, several hundred acres of waterfront here. It's been a
good addition to the community.
Talking to you, it sounds like Escanaba's, even though maybe a few setbacks, maybe it's not the big shipping and railroad town that it once was, but it's still growing in other aspects. Is that safe to say?
Yes. And I haven't even mentioned the tourist aspect. If the chamber heard this conversation, they'd say, Charles, you didn't even mention all of the tourists coming in here. You know, and we do have a lot of... 2 years ago, we had more darn people coming into the museum, and what's going on? And the Chamber of Commerce had a camper convention. Those oval trailers, I forget what they're called.
A teardrop?
No.
Or...
But they had hundreds and hundreds of them, that's just typical of the kind of attraction that the chamber tends to bring into this area, because they have the woods and the water and, you know, a lot of recreational aspects of this area, and brings in a lot of people.
Why don't you think more people, I alluded to this earlier, but it seems like... And maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like Escanaba sometimes gets overlooked. When you're looking at the UP, a lot of people will say, okay, you need to hit Pitchard Rocks and, you know, maybe hit the Sioux Locks and the Tequamanon Falls. But a lot of people don't get over here in the central or even the western part of the peninsula. Make the case of why should someone come over here?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to downplay the attractions up there on Lake Superior.
Yeah.
Pictured Rocks are just incredible. They really are marvelous. Mm-hmm. And
but if you're coming up here to see those, anyway, you might as well swing by here, too.
And then they maybe will go over to Marquette, which is a university town, and has a beautiful park sticking out into Lake Superior called Presque Isle, and then lots of other things in that town to see and do. So why come down here? I think I mentioned earlier, we have, besides the attractions here in Escanaba, we have Fayette, which is a ghost town right on a beautiful part of the Garden Peninsula on Big Bady Knock. We've got the casino, which is a very attractive asset. A lot of things to see and do in this area, but a lot of it has to do with just coming that extra hour or so, you know.
Yeah.
You know, even Fayette does pretty well compared to us. They're about an hour east of us. They get about 50,000-60,000 people a summer. We get 10,000, we're doing pretty good.
Mm.
And we're just an hour west of them, I think. And a lot of our people, of course, come from downstate. And I think most of them, they make a certain circuit. They stop at Mackinac Island. They go up to the Sioux. They go see Tequamanon. Then nowadays, a lot of them go up to Pictured Rocks. And then they think, holy cow, we've gone through quite a bit of the UP. We don't have that much time left. Let's just catch a couple more things and go home. And I think that's sort of the attitude. Or they think, where are we going to go next? And then they look at that peninsula sticking way up there into Lake Superior.
Yeah.
And they probably don't even know about all the historic attractions up there and how beautiful the Copper Country is. But, we're competing with that, too.
Yeah.
So,
but if anyone's listening, for the Port Huron area, if you're planning a trip up here, and we told you the same thing in Marquette too, but if you're planning the trip at least to Mackinac Island, take the couple extra hours to come over this way.
Can I mention one other thing? I tend to think looking east toward Fayette and Kitchikippe, but looking west, I mentioned the casino, 17 miles west of here, but about 50, 55 miles west of here is Iron Mountain. And if you're interested in history, Iron Mountain has two just remarkable items on display. One of them is a huge pump, a Cornish pump, that was used during the iron ore days. As you might guess from the name Iron Mountain, there was a lot of iron ore there. And the richest mine, unfortunately, flooded constantly. They had to pump that water out. And they got a huge pump. And I think it must have been so big and so expensive to move, they never did. And the Historical Society over there put a big warehouse around it, and you can go and see that. And then beyond that, just beyond that, there's another great big warehouse-type building. And inside that is something, if you're into the history of World War II or military history generally, especially World War II, though, you probably know something about the gliders that were used in the D-Day invasion, going into the Normandy and whatnot. And it was that glider was built right just about where the glider is sitting right now in the Iron Mountain Kingsford area. Wow. So those two things.
Yeah, there's another place to check out.
One, and of course, in Iron Mountain or near Iron Mountain, they have one of the old mines.
Vulcan, right?
Yeah, that's open for people to tour. So there's a couple of ways in which you can experience the history of iron, of the mining of iron ore. But then there's also this remarkable glider from the World War II era, and it's really special.
Well, Charles, on that note, I hope all of our listeners were writing down all those suggestions, because we have a long list. This conversation generated a lot of cool places that you have to check out, some of them that I've never seen or never been to, so some of them I need to go check out myself. Charles, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Charles Lindquist is the president of the Delta County Historical Society. As we bring you this conversation from the studios of WDBC Radio in downtown Escanaba, Michigan, I'm Caleb Gordon for 1380 WPHM.